Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues, etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. As we come here at the beginning of this new year, it's always good to reflect on the big questions. And one of the biggest questions is the issue of abortion. And it has remained a question for the 40-plus years since Roe v. Wade legalized abortion in the U.S. The story has simply not gone away. The anniversary of Roe v. Wade approaches, and people still march in Washington by the tens, if sometimes the hundreds of thousands. The American people still deeply care about abortion. Now, some care about it to support it, and some care about it to want to end it and make it unthinkable. Is it too much to say that our current president, President Barack Obama, is one of the people who cares most about preserving legal abortion in the U.S.? Will that be, in fact, a big part of his presidential legacy? Joining us to talk about the state of abortion in the U.S., Carol Tobias, a regular guest. She's president of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. Carol, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hey, thanks. It's great to be back.
Carol, will one of President Obama's legacies be, as president during his 8 years, for the most pro-choice president in, well, ever?
Yes, it really will be. President Clinton was a pro-abortion president who did what he could to keep abortion legal, but he also had the position that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. We never hear anything like that from this president. President Obama not only will defend abortion, he does everything he can to promote it. He has been a friend of Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider. He's going to have this legacy of being the most pro-abortion president, hopefully, that we ever have in this country.
Now, with that said, 40-plus years of perspective on the issue, some would say, golly, after that long, the pro-life community must certainly be flagging in its resolve. I mean, this is, as we are so often reminded, Carol, the law of the land. Has that proven to be true?
Well, so far abortion is the law of the land, but there is absolutely no evidence that the pro-life movement is flagging. And in fact, I think it's going in the other direction. We are motivated and energized, and new people are coming into the movement every day. We are attracting a lot of young people who look at an ultrasound of a baby and say, that's a baby, the unborn baby, and they recognize that that is a human being that needs to be protected. I'm very optimistic. I think it's the other side, those in the abortion industry who are getting a little depressed and wondering what's going on because they are not attracting the young people like they think they should be.
Are you surprised that the president did not explicitly mention anything about abortion, reproductive health, or Planned Parenthood in his State of the Union address?
I was a little bit. I'm not sure why he didn't, except it kind of goes along with his veto on Friday of the budget reconciliation bill, which would have defunded most of the federal tax money that goes to Planned Parenthood. He just kind of quietly signed it on a Friday afternoon. I don't know if he was trying to hide the issue, or what was going on there. But I think one other thing I would like to point out on this president. The House passed a bill that would say if a baby survives the abortion, that the baby is born alive during the abortion process, the doctor, the abortionist, and everyone in that room has to do everything they can to take care of that baby so that the baby has a chance to continue living. This president not only it passed in the House and did not get a vote in the Senate. We're still hoping we can do that maybe this year, although that might be doubtful. But this president threatened a veto if that bill actually would come through both the House and the Senate. He would rather protect the abortionist than the baby who survived the abortion. I think that shows how extreme, how radical he really has become on this issue.
And he has been consistent on that. He has, even in his short time as a senator, supported bills that would not protect, extend any protection to a survivor of abortion.
Right. Right.
Let's talk a little bit about the state of abortion in the U.S., starting with the big numbers, which is the number of abortions every year.
We are at about the lowest point we've been since 1975. That was the first year that recorded abortions went over 1 million per year. And in 2011, the numbers were down to, you know, maybe 1 million and maybe 60,000. The Centers for Disease Control just released a couple weeks ago their latest figures for 2012, showing that there was another 4% drop. So we're right at about 1 million abortions per year, which is still, believe me, 1 million abortions too many. But we were at a high of 1.6 million in 1990, so we have dropped more than 600,000 abortions per year in this country. And I think that is an indication that women are choosing life. The biggest gain actually, the biggest drop in the numbers, the biggest gain for us, was among teenagers, that fewer teenagers are having abortions. So the numbers are dropping. I think we are seeing more and more women choose life for their babies, and I'm just very encouraged by that.
Now, even Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider, has been performing less abortions, but it is still, as you note, their business in the crassest sense, isn't it?
Planned Parenthood is the nation's largest abortion provider, and their numbers have dropped slightly, but they are taking a bigger share of all the abortions that are performed in the country. They're now doing 25 to 30, and in one of the videos that came out this summer, they even claimed 40% of all abortions in the country that they, were being performed by Planned Parenthood affiliates. What we have seen, though, in their latest report is that their other services, and, you know, what they might do, they call, you know, cancer screenings, breast cancer screenings, they distribute contraceptives, you know, they do a few things other than abortions at their facilities, and those services have dropped dramatically. So of everything that they do, abortion is definitely their main procedure, that's their income, and that's what their offices revolve around.
What impact did the undercover videos that came out to the tune of almost a dozen, I think, over the course of the last year have, do you think?
There was a tremendous amount of energy and motivation that was pushed even higher in the pro-life movement. The people realized, I think everybody kind of knew, Planned Parenthood does abortions, but I think seeing the callousness of the Planned Parenthood officials, their personnel, talking about, you know, what price they can get for a baby's liver or kidneys, the tissue, I think maybe even sent shockwaves through the pro-life community that this group is, it's hard to say, even more callous, more cold-hearted toward, you know, absolutely no respect for that unborn child before or after death. And it really got a lot of people energized. And I know more people, they were bringing in their friends, their family members, saying, you know, I can't take this anymore. I have to do something. So it increased the ranks of the pro-life movement. Unfortunately, because of the president that's sitting in the Oval Office, we are not able to stop their federal funding.
Talk a bit about the pain-capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which has been enjoying some success.
Yes, the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act is a bill that has been passed in 12 states now that would say once an unborn child has developed to that point that he or she can feel pain, and we know that that is at least by 20 weeks after fertilization and probably even a few weeks before that, that the child can feel pain, that abortion is no longer allowed. It is illegal. That has been successfully passed in 12 states. There are a couple of states that are challenging it, but by and large, the pro-abortion movement is not asking or not pushing to get this up to the Supreme Court. We've had some favorable comments from Justice Kennedy on, you know, legislation and kind of this whole abortion procedure, so that we actually are optimistic that if the Supreme Court heard it, at least five of them would say that this law is constitutional and would stand up under Roe. So that's why we're not seeing the pro-abortion groups, you know, pushing to get this through the courts. The bill has passed in the U.S. House, and the Senate did vote on it this past summer, but there were enough Democrats to block the bill to filibuster that we were not able to get it through the Senate and to the president's desk.
Finally, with about 30 seconds here, Carol, how important is the next president to the pro-life movement?
The president can sign or veto legislation. The president appoints judges to the Supreme Court, the appellate courts, the federal district courts. The president makes appointments in his administration, including ambassador to the United Nations and the State Department. He or she can issue executive orders. This position is the most powerful position in the world, and we have currently a president that promotes abortion in this country and overseas. We need to make sure that our next president is doing exactly the opposite and pushing pro-life measures here and overseas.
Carol Tobias is president of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. You'll find a link to National Right to Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Carol, thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When we come back, Terry Mattingly is going to join us, as he does every week. We're going to talk about media coverage of religion and the division in the GOP. The Republican Party is divided between, some might say, the populists and the country clubbers, and that's probably a pretty good characterization. Does religious practice in particular, play any role in that division? We'll be right back.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
You can receive 50% off the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series during Logia's special Reformation Sale. Books like The Church by Professor Kurt Marquardt, Christology, Law and Gospel and the Means of Grace, and Baptism by Dr. David Scare, and Eschatology by Dr. John Stevenson. Browse before you buy at logia.org. You'll even find essays by Issues, Etc. regular guests for as low as $2. Logia's Reformation Sale, logia.org. L-O-G-I-A dot org.